And of all the sprays out there, this is the one, if you're a logger or somebody who's actually spending an enormous amount of time outdoors, this is probably a really good idea.
I've been thinking of getting into logging.
I was going to ask you, have you done any logging recently?
Well, you know, it would be fun, wouldn't it?
You could start.
Do you burn firewood?
No.
Okay, because that's another issue.
Because they hop out of the... Oh.
Well, you know, rodents like to live in firewood piles and things like that, and, you know.
Let me ask you something about ticks, because that seems to be everybody's main concern. And that is, I've heard, and maybe I heard it from you, that the greatest or most viable place for the tick disease to be carried is in mice.
Well, mice are very effective
carriers
of these diseases. But there are a lot of other ones as well, small mammals. I mean, birds, chipmunks, you know, other animals that also play a role. But the white-footed mouse is actually probably the most successful on transmitting these bacteria to ticks.
Because I think most people around here in Columbia County, anyway, think first of deer before they think
deer get the rap. You know, unfortunately, they get blamed for everything, even for their population being out of control. And as you probably know, it wasn't really their fault.
You know, my favorite movie?
There was another invasive species that really was...
My favorite movie is Bambi Meets Godzilla.
There you go.
Oh, I thought maybe it's the acorn crop. When the acorn crop is up, don't...
Well, 90% of the adult ticks live on deer. So that's where the deer word comes from.
The virus comes most likely from the mouse to the tick.
It's actually a bacteria.
Bacteria, I'm sorry. Yep. And the tick picks it up there and then jumps on the deer.
But actually, it doesn't go anywhere from the deer. All the deer do is actually support the adult population, give them enough of a blood meal that they can reproduce maybe 25, 26, 2800 little eggs, and then fall off the deer when they're on your property at night eating your plants, and then you have an explosion of eggs.
On my property, they're mostly pooping.
Yes, they do that too. The poop is okay. I'm welcome for the poop. It's not a problem, but the ticks, it's another story. You have, you know, if you think about maybe 100 or 200 ticks on a deer, and if you have a few fall off in your yard, you're looking, you know, just two, you're looking at 5,000 little eggs hatching out.
Oh, that's scary.
It is scary.
Are some of us more susceptible to tick bites than others?
It would seem to be.
I mean, that's my impression.
Between
me and my daughter, she gets them constantly.
I wouldn't say anybody is safe, you know, to say that, but some people just seem to. I'm one of those people that attracts ticks. Mm. We go in a group of five or six. I usually come back with most of them. Which, you know, if you're a fisherman and you go out and you catch all the fish, that's not so bad. But when you're going out and catching all the ticks, it's not so good. You know, ticks are actually very interesting. And, you know, if I were to show you a picture here on their front legs.
Yeah, that's really effective on the radio. Thanks.
I know. Now, you see this picture here? If you actually look at their front legs, they actually have little sensors for CO2 and for other smells that they can actually, you know, detect you walking by.
Wow.
And, you know.
And make their leap.
They don't actually leap, but no.
They don't leap,
they don't jump, they don't fly. They just kind of walk very slowly.
You walk through the grass and you rub up against the grass and they stick on your
You
clothes.
Have to make contact. They don't sort of...
That's correct.
Interesting.
That's correct. And, you know, most people consider the larger adult tick to be a bigger threat, but really it's the summer tick.
Right.
I'm sure you've seen how small they are, the summer ticks.
They're like smaller than a poppy seed.
Correct. They, on the other hand, don't generally climb up to the top of vegetation. They're right down there in the leaf litter. That's where they live, is in the leaf litter most of their lives.
Let me ask you one other thing. Somebody told me that I think of it as bayberry, but it's barberry bush, which is an invasive species.
Correct.
Though a pretty one, you know. I have a couple of sort of...
They are pretty. I've killed all mine, so I don't have any anymore.
Well,
but,
I hear they're a great host for ticks.
They
ticks
are.
Love
they,
them.
They make a tick habitat. You know, that's what they do. They basically protect the rodents. They actually support a higher infestation level than what would be outside of the barberry.
Uh-huh.
So and probably barberry is not alone in that. I would imagine that the multiflora probably are similar. You know, if you're familiar with how much multiflora there is in the area, another invasive plant that's also doing a lot of damage.
Yeah.
And when you say they create a habitat, I mean, it's not like a little hotel. What is it they actually...
Well, the ticks require enormous amounts of humidity just to survive.
Ah, humidity, okay.
So, you know, when we talk about coming through this last winter, everybody thought, oh, gosh, you know, the ticks are going to all be gone. And not the case at all. They're pretty tough in the winter. Summertime, dry and hot, on the other hand, they don't like. So dry and hot conditions are the kind of conditions you want to create around the home. Most people who get bit by these little animals basically get it right around the house. Mm-hmm. So, you know, mm-hmm. there's things you can do right around the house to make it safer, make it sort of a tick-free area. And one of the big ones is eliminating leaf litter. Leaf litter is where they have to spend a large part of their life because under the leaves
it's moist,
nice and moist and nice and humid, even on dry days.
Right.
So if you eliminate the leaf litter, you eliminate the ticks from around the house. Of course, sunlight plays into it too. You want it to be hot and dry as much as possible, especially where people gather, so that you don't have to be concerned. And that doesn't mean you're guaranteed that they're not going to still be somewhere on one particular day. You know, they could fall off a tick the night before, or fall off an animal the night before, or even crawl out from the woods. The worst areas are the places where the woods meet the lawn,
uh-huh.
or the field meets the lawn. Those are the places that are very active. Places where rodents go. That's why I mentioned wood piles before, because often you'll see when you're pulling wood in, because I burn a lot of firewood, you'll see a lot of little mouse nests in there. All winter long, they're making a place to stay. And you'll pick the wood up and bring it in the house and not even notice that a little tick got on you in the process. So even bringing wood in can actually lead you down the road to big problems.
You really have to do a tick check every day.
Tick checks are very important, but as I said earlier, the research is starting to say repellents, this one in particular, because it's a poison, also just DEET, things like oil of lemon, eucalyptus. You know, even DEET sprayed on your clothing will have some effect. So repellents are actually really important. Getting rid of the habitat around the house is also very important. And tick checks every day are very important.
Maybe I could spray my cat.
Well, that was my next question. What about if we let our animals go out at all?
My cats go out, and of course it's kind of irresponsible behavior to let your cats out because, you know, they do on occasion perhaps hunt a bird, although I've never caught them doing it.
My cats do that.
But, you know, and you don't really want that to happen. Cats are responsible for a lot of the decline of songbirds, so that's not really a good thing. But cats will actually bring them in. They don't get affected by these diseases, at least not yet. So, but they're bringing the ticks into the house. Okay. I mean, I know on my own cats, I get nymphal ticks all summer long on their eyelids.
Yeah.
You know, in places that are really difficult to remove. And, you know, they come in, they sit on the bed, they sit on the chair. And
Dogs can get Lyme disease, can't they?
Dogs can get Lyme. Dogs can get anaplasmosis as well. And, of course, when we talk about Lyme, Lyme is one of many. And I brought these little things for you to look at. Not that anybody can see it on the radio, but just basically explaining the different diseases that are involved. And this is actually a medical provider form that shows you, you know, basically what the deer tick is responsible for. And you'll see on this list, it's Lyme disease. And then the next one down, I think, would be babesiosis. And then the next one. And
This is totally freaking me out.
Yeah. And if you look at the other ones, you'll notice they can be quite serious, even fatal, if you don't get treatment. Lyme, on the other hand, kind of destroys the quality of your life, doesn't generally kill you. But these other ones require treatment.
I got ehrlichiosis.
Did you?
You probably had human granulocytic ehrlichiosis, which today is actually called anaplasmosis. Uh-huh. So you probably had anaplasmosis. Of course, ehrlichiosis, if you'll notice on this tick card, comes from the Lone Star tick. And I'll tell you, I know myself, I went to the physician when I was sick, and I said I took a deer tick off me. 10 days later, I got ill. And he said it was ehrlichiosis, but I saw the tick and it was a deer tick, so it wasn't ehrlichiosis. Mm. And I've been debating this with the state of New York for some time because we really don't have a lot of Lone Star ticks this far north. Long Island, on the other hand, maybe down further in the state, New Jersey, they probably do. They're going to be moving up probably at some point in time as well. They're really scary because they're even more aggressive than deer ticks.
And does their name suggest they began in Texas?
It does suggest that they came from that part of the world, yes.
I blame Rick Perry for that.
Me too. Me too, totally.
You know, let me just say that I recently read an article. It was posted on IMBY, I-M-B-Y, in my backyard, which is a local, it's a website that is for Claverick, Hudson, now Valacia has joined in. And it's an article by a young woman who's related to Jim and Meg Cashin here in Columbia County. She's a granddaughter, I think her last name is Cortez, and she's written the study. I think she's a student at New Paltz, mm-hmm. which is very interesting about the treatment of tick-borne diseases. And people talk about cases of Lyme that are chronic and go on for years and mm-hmm. years, and mm-hmm. it's the chronic Lyme that is causing many problems.
Yeah, I suggest that people that have any of those issues and want to find out good information, that they visit the Columbia University website, Tick-Borne Disease Research Center at Columbia University. They have a lot of current information, stuff that's going on right now, basically dealing with chronic tick-borne diseases.
And that's Columbia?
Columbia University Tick-Borne Research
Center. Now, looking at this map of higher incidence, we see, you can because you're on, it's on the radio, but Columbia and Northern Dutchess and parts of Green are really high in incidence. I assume that's partly because of their proximity to Connecticut.
Well, if you were to watch the pattern over the course of the 90s, mm-hmm. you would see that, it moved right up the Hudson.
Right down. Up the Hudson.
You know, it was Long Island, Connecticut, Rhode Island, places like that, you know, Nantucket, Martha's Vineyard, Cape Cod. And then it just basically moved right up the Hudson Valley. And this area, I mean, this is a, 2006, mm-hmm. an eight-year-old map that the state put together.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, they're a little slow with the information to update things. So it's actually much worse than that now on both sides of the river.
So my next question is, it says here that we all know that to look for rashes if we've had a tick bite. But it says only 60 to 80%. Correct. Result in rashes.
And generally, it's even, I think, a lower number than that. I think more often than not, it's adult ticks that we're talking about with a rash. Not always do we see rashes associated with nymphal ticks. So, no, if you don't get a rash, how do you know you have?
Right, that's my next question.
And that's really a problem because I'll give you an example. Monday I was at work, basically a pretty busy day. About 3 o'clock I went to get up out of my chair. My left knee got all of a sudden really painful and swollen, and I could barely walk. And the first time I had Lyme, back around 1999, that was the same thing that happened to my right knee. So my first instinct was, uh-oh, maybe I've gotten, you know, and I have been bitten recently, but nobody that was really engorged, which means, you know, long enough of a feeding to actually transmit something. So I wasn't really sure what was going on, but I was expecting more symptoms. They didn't come. So I have to assume that my left knee was just acting oddly because I'm getting older, mm-hmm. you know, and I'm not really sure. I haven't been to a physician to confirm any of that yet. But
that you're old? I can tell you that.
Oh, I know
that. You don't need to go to a physician.
I do know that, yeah.
Sorry.
But it's okay. The doctors around here, and I think they're probably right in this, they're very cautious about giving you an antibiotic the minute you get a tick. They won't do that. That's my experience, anyway.
But here's the problem with that, and I agree, and that's true.
I mean, they'll give you a prophylactic.
If you remove an engorged tick, you're supposed to go to the physician and get a prophylactic antibiotic, and I don't think any doctors have a problem with
right.
that. But when it's not engorged, or when people don't even see the tick, which is more often mm-hmm. the case, the doctor doesn't want to jump to any conclusions. So he says, well, the CDC criteria says it should be either confirmed blood work or a rash or some other way the doctor can identify that you actually have this problem. Problem is that not everybody gets the rash. Symptoms can be different for different people. And there's also some other bacterias that are at play here that don't give rashes. Mm. And that so you can be. And if these other diseases I was mentioning, like ehrlichiosis and anaplasmosis, you need treatment right away.
Uh-huh.
You can't hesitate on that treatment. Those diseases are very important to get the treatment right away. And I know when I went to my doctor when I had the anaplasmosis, I explained that to him, and he said, oh, no, you come back in 5-6 weeks, we'll do some blood work. And I brought the abstracts with me from the CDC showing that a couple of gentlemen that tried that in Wisconsin actually died before the 5 weeks was over. So I said, why don't we just start with 2 days or 3 days of the antibiotic, and if I don't feel any better, I'll come back and we'll see what else is wrong with me. Within 2 days, I was fine.
Mm-hmm.
And it was that quick, especially with anaplasmosis, that quick that it actually, and if I hadn't gotten treatment, I might have ended up in the hospital or even dying. So it's very important to get the antibiotics for some of the, now the babesiosis isn't even a bacterial infection, so that's even more complicated. And that can be, so am I Am I bringing positive stuff here again today or what?
Well, what you're pointing out is that they don't know much about it. It's the treatment is very controversial now and
it
up
is.
In the air. And they say they don't even know if you've had it until after you've had it. And they can see antibodies.
Correct.
And they know that you've had it
right.
at some point.
Your body's reaction is what they look for.
Exactly.
They don't actually look for the active infection. They'd have to go in to look for the DNA of the bacteria. And that could be quite expensive. And insurance companies don't often want to do that.
So what this says to me is that prevention is important.
That is interesting because, I have a lot of friends always trying to get me to go hiking. And if they're listening, now they know why I don't go.
Right.
And I'm not going out. It's a horrible world out there.
Well, I talk to kids a lot and I tell kids it's really important to go outside. I mean, having a connection with nature, especially when you're a young person, is vitally important just to understand that you're even in the natural world. And we can't all stop going outside because we have these problems, but it is pretty dangerous out there. So we have to be armed with all the information necessary to keep us healthy.
We have to cover up.
Did you ever see that movie Safe with Julianne Moore?
I did not.
I think it's by Todd Haynes. It's a fantastic movie. And she keeps suffering from more and more of these problems in our atmosphere. Like last week, we were talking about electromagnetism.
Yeah.
This week here, we're talking about... Well, she ends up living in a kind of sealed little environment. It's a good movie. I recommend it.
I talk to a lot of those people all the time. They have other health issues and then get bitten by a tick and are just devastated. You know, I talk to people all the time that have brain fog, can't remember things. And
heart
issues. Well, it's a good excuse. I use it as myself because I've had Lyme a few times. So I can say, well, it must be the Lyme. That's why I don't remember your name or whatever. But it actually, even the Lyme can get very complicated without treatment. It goes to your heart area. It goes up into your central nervous system. You know, this is all serious stuff. And now we have, you can see on this list is quite a few important things. Now, as an example, we used to always say with Lyme disease, you have at least 24 hours of a safe period, even generally more than that, of them feeding before they can transmit. But we're not looking at that anymore. Mm-hmm. With anaplasmosis, we're looking at more around 12 hours.
Where can our listeners access this information you handed to us here?
Well, that's an interesting question. This is actually a medical provider form. So if they're doctors, they can probably get it from the health department in New York State. I just happen to copy it and give it out to the people.
There it is, yeah.
They actually have the information that the doctor has. Because often I find the doctors don't have it, so you can bring it to the doctor with you.
So at the website of the State of New York Department of Health.
Yes, I know I was bitten, and I would like to have these tests.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's basically what you need to do is if you don't feel well, you need to pursue it, because these things can get very serious. And if your doctor doesn't seem to be responding properly, if he seems to be a little hesitant, maybe you need to seek another doctor, because this is important stuff.
Right. Okay.
There's a new one now called the deer tick virus, which I don't know if you've heard about that one.
No.
That one is an encephalitis situation. And basically it requires about 15 to 30 minutes of feeding from the tick. 15 to 30 minutes. So that's like scary. In Putnam County, they found up to 6% of the ticks infected with it. So we haven't seen it up here yet. At least I haven't heard about it up here yet. But generally, the way things have been working with this, things are kind of going up the Hudson Valley. Mm-hmm. So I would be concerned that when that gets here, and that's why I talk about products like this with problems like encephalitis. You know, you can be asymptomatic. You can not have it. You know, it's like West Nile virus, kind of similar to that in a way. You may not have any reaction, but you could be very seriously damaged or even killed at the same time. So it is getting serious. Yeah.
I did want to point out one thing that they now have available for cats and dogs. And I do have cats who unfortunately have slipped out the door and now they're indoor, outdoor cats. They're hard to keep in. The vet gave me last year a Seresto collar, which is good for 8 months, which is terrific because I used to have to catch the cat, pin him down and try to put
Frontline. Yeah.
And Frontline doesn't work anymore or wasn't working. And this is for fleas and ticks. And it is to me like a miracle because I used to have to pick the ticks off his eyelid every night, as you said, and had had to take ticks off my body as well. And that doesn't happen anymore because of this
No, it's
colic.
Good. They have quite a few new products for our pets.
Well, that's good news, Ellen, because most of what Rick has brought us today is depressing.
Yeah, I seem to have a tendency to be talking about depressing things more often
But
than
we're always glad to have you here.
But at the same time, like I said, if you visit the Columbia University site, you will actually find some positive information there about some of the research that's being done right now, some of the testing that's actually being done, some of the things that they're looking at to control tick populations, things like that. For now, I would just say get rid of leaf litter around the yard, open up, make sunny areas, don't gather in those places where ticks live, and also use protective clothing and sprays and repellents. Very important.
And now people are looking at, according to the IMBY article, herbal treatments and Chinese herb treatments and that sort of thing, which have been effective with some people.
Yeah, so I think a lot of times you need to do antibiotics and herbal treatments,
right,
I think.
Right.
I think, you know, the antibiotics Can't are still it. Very important, though. Right. You know, you don't want to stay away from that idea because
right.
I think that's really critically important.
That's right.
We've been talking with... You have more you want to say?
Yes, I do.
Oh, sorry. I thought we were going to wrap this up. Oh,
not quite yet.
Oh, sorry, Ellen. Oh, my gosh. I overstepped my bounds.
That's all right. I just wanted to.
Yeah, you're tough on her. I mean, I was going to say that. Oh, I heard you before. You're tough on her. I'm kidding.
Well, it's
I
just that the show,
it.
Between last week and this week, I think we should start calling our show Apocalypse Now.
Yeah. I wanted to ask about what the winter weather did to the things that have been attacking trees.
The other forest pests.
Yeah, the other forest pests.
We're talking about the borer?
The emerald ash borer.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
The emerald ash borer, unfortunately, the emerald ash borer is beneath the bark, very well protected by the tree.
It's alive and well.
Yeah, and it needs really cold temperatures. I think even in places like Michigan where it was much colder, I expect that they probably did okay up there too. So we don't expect any real damage. Hemlock woolly adelgid, on the other hand, might have gotten hit pretty hard, but the surviving offspring will reproduce and the progeny will be more cold tolerant. So that's kind of how that stuff works.
And it didn't harm the ticks at all.
The ticks didn't seem to. Well, there may have been a few that were harmed here and there, but I expect most of them did very well. I know in Greene County, the ticks are very active right now. I don't know about over here. I haven't spoken with too many people over here lately, but the last few weeks has been very active. Where I work, they're coming in almost every day. So the ticks are out there. They're back. And they're just as threatening as they've always been, and everybody needs to learn how important this is and really pay attention to this because you don't want to end up in the hospital later. You know, most of the people I've known that have ended up in the hospital take it very seriously now. You know, sometimes, unfortunately, that's what it takes.
Yeah. What about the stink bug?
The stink bug also will probably be fine this year because they overwinter in also cracks and crevices. Mm. Maybe some of them would have been damaged, but I would expect that they're not.
No, they're just, they seem to be indestructible.
They're pretty tough. I don't know if you've ever had to deal with them in your in your gardens. Have you?
I am in my house.
Oh, in your house, yeah.
Not in the garden. I haven't.
And we're talking the broad, the brown marmorated stink bug.
They're at least beautiful.
They are very interesting looking. And, and you know, you have to respect all of these animals. I mean, even the ticks, I mean, they're kind of interesting. The ticks are just basically like mosquitoes, getting a little blood meal and moving on.
Right.
Not like us. We kill everything we eat, you know. Mm-hmm. They just take a little meal and move on. Unfortunately, there's some parasites involved that you know, some pathogens inside the tick that make it much more complicated. But, you know, really you can't, you know, I'm defending the ticks. Is that what I'm doing?
I was going to say, do I really have to respect them?
You know?
Yeah, just because you win in the
Darwinian
War. Well,
they're blood-sucking parasites. But, I mean, really, you know, when we talk about invasive things like
right.
that, I mean, the most invasive animal on the planet is what again? I forget.
Cockroach?
No, I was going to say Homo sapien. But that's just my perspective, I suppose.
Yeah. I don't suppose any of our listeners have questions for you because we haven't heard the phone ring, but we might issue an invitation.
We might, but we shouldn't because we've been having phone problems here today.
Oh, okay.
So let's quash that
idea.
Needless to say, if they have questions, they can always call Cornell Cooperative Extension in Hudson or in Acre.
Do you want to give your phone number?
Yeah, my number is 622-9820. Basically, call the office at any point if you have a question, and we'll get back to you.
And we've been talking to Rick Burstell from the Cornell Cooperative Extension of Columbia Green Counties. Is that it, Ellen, now, or can I mean, can we...
Yes, unless Mr. Burstell has some pressing...
I mean, to be honest with you, I've been wanting to do some radio spots for the station, because I really do love this radio station, and I've been listening to one radio spot that I did about Master Gardener program that's been going on for months, and I'd like to replace that with...
You'd like a new one?
I'd like to get some tick stuff out there.
Absolutely.
Some tick information, maybe a few different ones, so we can actually
keep
the word up about everybody paying attention. And
I hope our able-bodied staff out there, all 20 of them, one of them will come in and set you up with...
I also brought you a bunch of stuff that you can give to your staff, because I think this stuff is important.
Oh, good. Thank you.
You can spread the word to them about how serious this stuff is, and hopefully everybody will be safe.
And we will archive this discussion.
It's in the works.
It can be replayed at other times on the station.
Great.
Yep. So... With our dulcet tones included.
Well, thank you, guys. Anytime we can spread this word, I'm perfectly willing to come over and do it, because it's important stuff.
Well, stop in the office on your way out and speak to Lynn or Jessica and tell them of your interest.
Okay,
I'm sure they'll take you up on it.
I will.
Thank you, Rick.
I've just been trying to find the time to actually do the spots, because we have the machine to do that. I just haven't had the time.
Great.
Okay.
Okay, thanks, guys. Have a good afternoon.
Thank you.
We'll try after that. I mean, you know, I'm afraid of everything now. I've always been
afraid. Everything is downhill from now on.